Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 390 of the Roguecast, recorded October 18th, 2022. Basic Owlbear Head Biology. All right, we are coming to you from our air-cooled office here in Rogues Gallery. It is down to a balmy, like, 72 outside.
Yeah, the AC doesn't actually necessarily need to be on today. It's slightly stuffy in here, as is often the case.
Not as bad as it usually is.
Not as bad as it usually is, because it's cool outside, even though Randy protests it because he loves summer so much.
I do. I do protest it. I will get my Weather Dominator online. I will bring us back up to 90 by the weekend.
Then Dave and I will overthrow Randy and take over his Weather Dominator and put it back down to, like, 65.
So all the changes in the Texas weather, all that weird weather, that is actually just coming from Rogues Gallery's Weather Dominator.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know that. A lot of people don't understand
it's like a big game of King of the Hill. Who controls the Weather Dominator?
Yes. Yeah. We probably make a lot more money with our Weather Dominator than we have selling comics and games.
Yeah, but I don't want to get into the racket.
Yeah. You didn't get into the Weather Domination a bit for the commercial reasons.
That's right. I'm a Weather Domination artist.
I mean, tonight the low is 41. That's pretty damn good.
That's what I was excited about. A little taste of the fall that they see in the Northlands. But they didn't come to us, Randy, to hear about weather. Let's get these people some comics.
That was the weather. Let's hit the
games.
News.
Yes.
And sports.
We'll be back to the weather later.
So, store news. We want to mention that we got in the Fallout RPG box set. So if you want to play the Fallout RPG, it's got a starter set, which is kind of cool. A lot of games are doing those.
Yep.
It looks really cool.
I actually hadn't had a chance to look at that. Is that the one that's face front out there?
Yeah.
Okay, very cool. I didn't know that Fallout, or hadn't registered, I should say.
We also got a couple little board games, Distant Suns and Break the Cube, which was kind of party game-ish looking things. And then a bunch of expansions for the My Little Pony deck builder game, the Transformers deck building game, the One Ring RPG, the Vaisen RPG, and the Morkborg RPG. So those all got new expansions.
Nice.
And then we got Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Last Ronin back in stock.
We were not sure if this was going to happen.
Nope.
We were a little worried that we might go all the way through the holiday season without, you know, basically the most popular miniseries of the last year or two. Because it did take a while to come out.
It did.
But it was extremely popular, and we're like, oh, now that it's collected, we want to put this in more people's hands. Can we even do that? And the answer is yes.
Yeah.
We do finally have it back in. So, you know, grab it while it's around.
Yeah. We also have some stuff from local artists. We have the origami bookmarks. You guys have seen these? They're little.
They're super cool.
Yeah, I forgot to look at them, actually.
It's a little face. It's like there's Goku, there's Martian Manhunter, there's
probably a Ninja Turtle
Stitch.
Or something like that. Yeah. And it looks like they're kind of like either gripping or biting down on your page.
Yeah, you put them on the page and it holds.
They
space.
Slide over it, but it'd be like their little mouth chomps down on it and stuff. And the graphic design is really good.
Yeah, so we've got a few of those. Worth noting that we have our Halloween party coming up next week.
Yes, a week from tomorrow, or today, I guess, as you hear it.
Yep.
Basically,
yep.
It'll be Wednesday the 26th, 7 to 9 p.m. We would like you to dress up. We're going to give out a few little prizes and things like that for favorite costumes. We'll do some trivia. We'll have the cosplayer Lucky Lemon visiting from out of town.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to do like a Q&A on cosplay. And what else? I don't know. I think we'll have candy.
We have a video short.
And we have a little video short, which I have lent my voice to.
There'll be a sale.
There'll be a sale. And maybe some other cool little things. I think we should say what it might be. Like we're maybe going to try.
So we're not going to put this on our promotions, but you as Roguecast listeners know there's a possibility we'll have somebody here, a local artisan, selling some craft stuff and also doing tarot readings.
I think that's cool for Halloween.
Yeah, it
that's
is.
Cool. That's when people most need to find out that they're going to die.
Also, we're going to get out a Ouija board and summon ghosts. We'll summon the ghost of Phil Collins from our walls.
It can't possibly. We've already got the ghost hanging from the ceiling, Sam.
It's true, Sam.
So, y'all come see Sam the Store Ghost,
yeah, make
by
sure
the way.
Say hi to Sam the Store Ghost.
He's getting a little quieter.
Our single most popular addition to the staff, I think.
Yeah, one of the best. Honestly, he's better than any of the three of us.
Yes, that's true. He gets a lot done.
Yeah, he does.
What else do we have?
I was going to mention
the Halloween itself.
I was going to say Halloween Day. We have a flyer that Serena, our staffer, kicked up for us. She is driving a lot of our Halloween interest, and
yep.
She's going to be here from 4 to 6 that day. We'll be here the whole day, me and Dave. But basically, if you come in that day with kids, you can basically pre-trick or treat, get some candy, get some free comics.
Yeah, yeah. I think she may be. I don't know if she'll be up here already. In her costume, I believe she and her partner are doing a camp counselor and like Jason or Ghostface kind of thing, you know, a slasher, which sounds like a lot of fun.
Dave, you gonna dress up that day?
We'll see. My sister did get me a. If I do, this would be an easy one. I may be a casual Dave Vecna. from Stranger Things. My sister, because we watched Stranger Things, when I had a birthday a couple weeks ago, she got me a like really very good Vecna mask.
Oh, okay.
It's a really good one.
Just wear that with a t-shirt.
But I would just be wearing that like with a t-shirt and shorts and whatever,
Kind of like that the makeup trailer Vecna.
You
absolutely.
Need to get, like, a jogging suit. And a
jogging suit. A red velvet jumpsuit. So come for that.
Vecna's just tired. It's just not ready to go with. Actually, you know, Vecna, I guess, usually just walks around naked, which is pretty creepy.
Right.
Or he, you know, what, like tentacles to various.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he shoots out tentacles and stuff.
Yeah. So Dave will not be shooting out tentacles on Halloween.
You don't know. Don't tell him what he can.
Did you
can
say
do.
Shooting out or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Before we get to our other news, I want to mention some friends are doing a Kickstarter for something called Henshin.
Oh yeah,
and this is their they're basically doing a video shorts based around a temp organization for henchmen for villains, for supervillains.
Yeah, I know the people involved in this too, or at least some of them.
Yep.
And they're talented, smart, funny people.
It's gonna be super fun. The campaign goes through the early part of November, but right now this week they have an anonymous backer who has offered to back $10,000 if they get 100 new backers by Friday. So, if you want to really help out, you can go over and back Henshin. It's on Kickstarter. If they get those 100 backers, they will get this big contribution that could basically get them to halfway or fully funded, I think.
That's pretty dope.
So, yeah. And they've got... They've one of the guys I'm working with, this Les, my buddy Les, has done a lot of interviews. So, they've had people from, like, PR firms and... producers of different shows. We worked on Dark Crystal and stuff, giving into this. So, like, it's probably going to get funded, and it's probably going to have some pretty cool videos at the end of it.
Yeah. People can go check out the Kickstarter page and see what it's all about.
Yep, the Kickstarter page, Henshin. H-E-N-C-H-I-N.
Like henching, but casual. Henshin. Just henching it.
Like I say, if you get in there and the next couple of days before Friday, and you could really help them out, and I know they would really appreciate it. And you'll get some cool stuff out of it.
Nice.
The big news this week, though, Twisters is in development.
Not just one Twister this time, which, actually, it had many Twisters in the movie Twister. But now it's called Twisters.
Yeah. And I feel like this is like Alien and Aliens. So I hope that Twisters will be as good a sequel as Aliens was.
I'm sure it will. One of those rare sequels, as good as, if not perhaps better, than the original.
Now, it is a shame that we've lost Billy the Extreme.
Are arguably ruinous to the movie.
did you read the description of what
the
story is?
Do people know how
is?
Into Twister we are?
I feel like they do. But apparently this story is going to focus on Billy the Extreme and Helen Hunt's daughter.
Okay.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah.
I'm that's cool.
So, for those who don't know, Twister was a 1996 storm-chasing blockbuster by John DeBont, coming off of Speed.
Yep. Written by Michael Crichton of Jurassic Park fame.
Yep.
I believe with his wife. I think she co-wrote it. And it like took and it had the same kind of wild ride. You know, it's a kind of a silly movie. They're arch rivals as they try and get new storm technology tested during the course of it. Their arch rivals are the corporate sponsored weather team led by Cary Elwes, doing not his English accent, but a scary Southern accent.
Yep.
I guess he won't be reprising his role.
not unless he somehow survived that Twister.
You saw a car explode.
Maybe his daughter will be working for the corporate sponsors.
We happened to have Twister on at the store. And one of our customers came in, and I guess knowing us also from social media and stuff, he's like, you guys really like Twister.
I think we've mentioned it on the podcast a few times as well.
Yeah. Anyway, yes, that is a pleasure or a guilty pleasure, depending on when you're asking.
So here's the crazy stuff about this. Steven Spielberg, head of Amblin Entertainment, he's the one who got the script done by the Revenant scribe, Mark L. Smith.
No.
That's a pretty big name,
isn't it? That's pretty big.
The Top Gun Maverick director, Joseph Kosinski, was going to direct, but he is instead doing a Formula One racing movie for Brad Pitt on Apple.
Boo.
So the people they've got lined up directed include, as possibilities, the Oscar-winning Free Solo team of Jimmy Chin and Elizabeth Chai Vesser-Haley.
Okay.
Dan Trachtenberg, who did 10 Cloverfield Lane and Prey.
Right.
And Travis Knight, the chief of the Lake Entertainment, who did Missing Link and Kubo and the Two Strings.
Randy, you are laughing because these are quality productions.
These are ridiculously good people to be doing a Twister sequel.
Yes.
I mean, the guy who did Kubo and the Two Strings did Bumblebee. I mean, he's not outside of the
Bumblebee's
doing...
a good movie.
Yeah, I know. Bumblebee is also, it's somewhat Twister level as far as it's also got some dopey stuff in it.
Yeah. I think he would be a good...
I think that's a good fit. That's a good fit.
Well...
And in fact, star of Bumblebee, Haley
Stanfield, she would be perfect as the daughter.
She could be perfect as the daughter.
I'm also just saying, is it Dan Trachtenberg? I mean, the guy who did Prey?
Yeah.
I don't think this is above him either.
I kind of agree. I do think 10 Cloverfield Lane, his previous one, I think that's his pinnacle, and I do think that's better than Twister.
So, let me say, I think, by the way, yeah, Haley Stanfield would be good. I'm saying Maya Hawke from Stranger Things.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Weirdly, I actually, that something about her, like, I think even the features feel sort of right for that.
Yeah, like she could be good at it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
By the way, Twister, the original, is kind of about the ensemble, and as we were watching it this time... We were like, oh man, there's the people in this. Like, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah.
Giving it his all.
Oh, yeah.
As stonerish Dusty.
Dusty.
Talking about the suck zone and all that stuff. But also, who's the Ferris Bueller guy?
Alan Ruck.
Alan Ruck is in it. Obviously, Helen Hunt.
Jeremy Davies from Lost.
Yep. And a brief role we caught from, who is it? From
Anthony Rapp.
Working for the bad, the evil corporate weather chasers, tornado chasers. anyway, you know, there's a pretty high probability that this somehow doesn't come off good and ends up actually even sucking.
Yes.
But I think we would all be, we would like it to go come off. That'd be fun.
Twister 2, the suck zone.
I think you could say something a little bit with global warming and causing chaotic weather patterns.
That's absolutely true. I don't want it to quite go into that sci-fi territory that was like the Day After Tomorrow 2012.
No.
And I realize that would be a temptation. But yeah, scary supercells and things like that.
Storm chasers
increased...
are still as nuts as they were 20 years ago.
Get me those weirdo people, dudes who look like weirdo graduate students. Get some good character actors to fill in these roles. And I would watch.
Yeah, definitely.
So another interesting reboot that's coming. They're doing a reboot of Naked Gun, the spoof of cop shows.
Right, kind of, you know, it's isn't that sort of the team that did Airplane? Yeah. It always had that sort of mile-a-minute humor. And the new version would feature...
So, this is, first of all, this director is Akiva Schaffer.
Okay.
Who did the Chippendale Rescue Rangers movie recently.
Yes, it was good.
As a Lonely Island person, part of the Lonely Island comedic crew. They have not gotten this actor on board yet.
But they are pursuing.
But they are pursuing, and he seems interested. Liam Neeson.
I think it's actually a good call.
It's a great call.
I am tired of him doing his mean, tough old man movies.
Yeah. And he's also been on sketch comedy stuff as well. I mean, the shorts, the HBO thing, or Shortcuts?
No.
What's it called?
Oh, man, it's...
With Warwick Davis.
Yeah, with Warwick Davis.
Yeah, somehow I don't remember.
Anyway, yeah, it's that sort of spoof of Inside Hollywood stuff, not unlike Ricky Gervais's Extras.
And he showed up on Key and Peele at one point.
Yeah, but he if you have not seen this, I know we've talked about it before, but if you have not seen the bit from whatever this show is...
It's not Extras.
It's well, short, is it Extras? It's short something.
Yeah.
It's a little... I'm
looking it up.
Where Liam Neeson goes to a producer to say that he wants to start doing improv comedy... You need to see it. Just type in Liam Neeson improv or Liam Neeson comedy. You'll find the short. It's just about 5 minutes long. As this guy who is known for playing these grim, morose characters tries to do comedy. It's great.
Life's too short.
There we go.
That's what it's called.
Anyway, so check that out. And that will lead you to know That now I think he'd be that. This would be a different kind of role. He'd be camping it up like Leslie Nielsen did.
Leslie Nielsen was a serious actor until he did Airplane.
Right,
that's kind of why it worked.
Part of the art of camp and that sort of old school kind of style camp, like in the Batman 66 and stuff like that, is you have to have people doing ridiculous things straight faced. So Leslie Nielsen was good at that.
He was very good.
He delivered it all with a sort of serious face, a little goofiness, but mostly serious. And then O.J. Simpson launched from his wheelchair into the air.
Still makes me laugh.
Me too.
They were masters of physical comedy. Usually a few dumb gags that didn't work for me, but they just hit you with so many, and some of them are really good.
I mean, I'll say that both Naked Gun movies still hold up for me.
Yeah. They are, like, again, the sheer number of gags and like enough of them land and in all cases their batting average is good that it's a pretty hilarious time.
Yep.
Is this some kind of bust? Yes, it's very impressive.
Big casting news from Marvel. Harrison Ford is taking over the role of Thunderbolt Ross in Captain America.
It's weird that at the same time he's playing Indiana Jones, he is also playing Old Man Thunderbolt Ross.
So Thunderbolt Ross feels like a better fit for him at this point in his career.
It does,
right?
Sucks.
Like,
absolutely.
And also, he took over as Jack Ryan from Alec Baldwin. That worked out great.
Yeah.
Like he can definitely take over a role. I feel like he's going to be a good Thunderbolt Ross.
Yeah, he definitely, I think, will probably look a little more visually like what he does in the comics.
And that's sort of that kind of, like, anger that he can kind of channel when he does his finger point, and he's like, no, sir, to the president in, like, Patriot games and stuff like that. That's the thing I want to have him channel for Thunderbolt Ross.
Is he going to be Red Hulk?
No, I don't know.
I mean, if so, they better bring out Andy Serkis to mocap the Hulk, because Harrison Ford ain't up for that. Harrison Ford would like to sit down in his easy chair and have a nappy nap for about 3 hours. But I love Harrison Ford, I think he will be good for this role.
Yeah, I do too. This is an interesting little bit. Everyone, all of my friends seemed really excited about this. Sydney Sweeney is supposedly going to maybe star in a new Barbarella film. Sydney Sweeney, I don't know who this actress is, but I looked. So she was on The Handmaid's Tale, Sharp Objects, but most recently she's been in Euphoria, The White Lotus, and I haven't really watched enough of those to figure out who she is. She's a younger actress.
Yeah,
is she just respected as an actress?
People seem to really like her. So apparently she is considering doing a version of the famous Jane Fonda. Barbarella.
Yeah, which for people who didn't see it was like what, late 60s, I think, or 60s-ish anyway. A sort of sci-fi, a sexy sci-fi romp based on a French comic book with like, I forget, but there's like a machine called like the Orgasmatron. Like, it
is there really? Okay.
It is ridiculous. It is like very campy kind of stuff. I quick looked her up. She does fulfill the other thing that Barbarella requires, which is she seems to be pretty. And so I can see why that part works. Beyond that, I don't know anything about her. I've never seen Barbarella. I've seen bits and pieces of it. It's fine. I think I tried to watch it one time and it was like, I don't know, too weird and campy. Didn't grab me. You know what? We were just watching The Fifth Element the other day, and one of the things I like about Fifth Element was that it is such a... It's a big-budget sci-fi thing, but it's also kind of, like, campy and lighthearted and weird and sweet sometimes, and, like, it does some things that other big-budget sci-fi things don't. And a Barbarella movie could arguably do some of that same kind of stuff. In fact, I doubt Fifth Element would exist but for some influence of Barbarella. That's kind of a little bit of what was going on there. I wouldn't mind seeing that. I'd probably be more interested in a new Barbarella than watching the old one.
Yeah, I agree with that. And then finally, Joe Manganiello, who is a actor I don't know that well, but he's very into D&D.
Didn't he play Deathstroke in the
He did
Justice
play Deathstroke
League.
In the Justice League movie,
okay.
Yes.
He's a D&D nerd.
Well, he is going to co-direct an official D&D documentary made by Wizards of the Coast. There have been several of these like fan-made things, but that's an interesting thing.
Well, he's the one who has like all of the like, we have the owlbear. He has the entire line in his game room that Wizards gave him.
Yeah, if you're an actor with some money.
And well, he didn't even have to spend his money. They gave it to him.
Well, I think he did like a podcast for Wizards of the Coast, didn't he?
I'll do a podcast for an owlbear head. Wait, isn't that what we're doing right here? Are we not getting an owlbear head at the end of this?
We definitely didn't get it free.
I mean, technically you already have an owlbear head.
That's true, I did.
You don't want two of them. Then they'll mate and you'll have multiple owlbear heads.
Like tribbles?
Little owlbear head couplets. Bunch of cub heads on the wall.
It's weird.
It is weird.
Yep.
But it's just that's what would happen, though.
That is what happened. That's just science.
That's basic owlbear head biology.
Basic owlbear head biology.
God.
And on that note, yeah, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics the week of Wednesday, October 19th, and first thing you should know is it's a Tom Taylor Tuesday.
Yep.
Which means that there is a new issue of Nightwing starting a new story arc with a pretty cool premise, I thought.
Well, after the fallout of the last story arc, mm-hmm.
there's
and
a
what that's going
power
to do
vacuum
to,
of
yeah,
sorts.
Bloodhaven.
In, can we say like how like it starts out with this mob guy... Essentially, Nightwing has to do an escort mission.
Yeah, he does.
You know how tough those are in video games.
Yep.
But he's got backup though. He's got like Barbara, Batgirl, with him, and aren't like the Titans helping out?
They're watching Bloodhaven and taking care of the dog.
By the way, I really like this book. Has been a basically Nightwing and Barbara Gordon team up book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, Nightwing doesn't hesitate to call on his buddies. It is kind of cool. Every once in a while, like the villains are like, "We brought backup," and he's like, "I brought the freaking Teen Titans."
Yep.
There's a pretty ballsy twist in this one too.
Yeah, I also want to say like
it's one of those things where you read it and you have that twist, and you're like, "That's insane!" If you know what the twist is alluding to.
Yeah, the last page in this one was great. I'm super excited to see the next. And Taylor's great at doing this sort of like, "Wait, what?"
It's one of those. You're kind of shocked that he decided to take this particular thing on.
Yep.
But I'm like, if anybody can make it work, it's going to be him.
More fantastic art by Bruno Redondo, who I think may be one of the best comic artists working today, and a fantastic cover.
Yeah, and it is a fun escort mission, by the way. It's they're having to watch this this mobster, and I don't know, that guy is tricky. The bad guys are tricky. They've got some cool action sequences and stuff like that, and... and there's superhero sex. I'm just going to go ahead and say it.
There is.
It happens.
And then we got Deceased War of the Undead Gods, number 3, which brings in a couple of DC's starfaring heroes. And
right, so this
heroes.
Deceased is their zombie series. We've been hyping it for years now whenever they do a new miniseries. This is the one that gets to cosmic levels. Can we say what happened to Darkseid at the end of the previous issue?
I don't think we should.
Okay. A big, neat thing happened with him that I thought, that's fun. But mostly, I think we can maybe say who the two...
No, we shouldn't say who it is.
All right. Well, the previous issue, because this was baked into the premise, he had a lot of fun with bad boy Guy Gardner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it seems like he is picking, you know, the DC's space-based heroes and stuff like that. He's finding some fun ones to shine the spotlight on. And using that playground well.
Yep. People should be reading this. It's super fun. If you haven't read Deceased, we all highly recommend it. Mm-hmm.
It's a good time. Getting spooky with some superhero zombies.
And then new stuff. We've got GCPD, The Blue Wall, which I think is maybe the most interesting new thing we read this week. It's
by John Ridley, the guy who wrote the movie and won the Academy Award for 12 Years a Slave.
Yep. And has written a ton of... He's doing the I Am Batman. He's got like 3 books this week.
Yep.
Yeah, he also did the Penguin One
Penguin
Bad Day.
One-shot for One
I think
Bad
he doesn't
Day.
Always register for us. You know, sometimes people who are good in other mediums aren't always great in comics. But he is good. And I read enough of the Penguin to see that it was the Penguin thing to see was pretty good. This one is interesting because, well, in short... He is a black man writing about police in a contemporary times, and as you know, this is a somewhat volatile mix.
And it seems to focus on a group of cadets who have just graduated.
Three graduates that are all friends, so they're tight-knit, and they interact with each other, and they go out for drinks and stuff after their day. Yeah. And so you revisit them over the course of like their first week or two, and you also see what it's like even before they go on the job.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, Montoya has been, you know, who began as a Batman supporting character in, like, the 1990s, and has now been, after Commissioner Gordon recently retired, she's been elevated to Commissioner of Gotham. And so she is, but she's been a pretty dark, cynical place.
Yeah, she's always been fairly cynical.
And I suppose that may be the sort of, that may be where the character through which Ridley is going to voice maybe the darker thoughts about cops, even though she is herself a cop.
Right.
Because at one point, one of the cadets talks to her. She has a first day experience that was kind of harrowing, where it's like, oh man, she like kind of came close to potentially shooting somebody who could have been, who was an innocent person.
Yeah.
And Montoya ends up talking to her, and there's some question of like sort of the political side of the GCPD, or like we need to shine a spotlight on this person. She didn't shoot, and she did her job. And Montoya's like, she did the bare minimum, but she respects the guy is like, this could help us recruit more good cops and stuff. And so she herself talks to the girl, and she can't help but keep it to, but kind of let her cynicism creep out. And she's got a pretty dark view of things.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of interesting dynamics at play in it.
Also, the artist is Stefano Raphael, who worked on Gotham Central.
I think we were a little worried this was going to be kind of too kind of copaganda sort of stuff.
Rah-rah cops.
And it's, you know, it is, you know, you might argue it's not critical enough, but it's not. It's certainly not unaware of issues, of systemic stuff. And, yes, it does have the vibe of Gotham Central, which was a book we all liked.
Yeah. And it's an it's an interesting story. Like I say, it's definitely one of the more interesting things we read this week. I think we all had a lot to say.
Did you mention the artist? The art's real
good.
Yeah,
I just said Stefano Raphael. Yeah. The art, yeah. All right. Harley Quinn, the animated series, gets another series called Legion of Bats. This picks up literally 2 seconds after the end of the new season. That is when the Bat family all jumped off the roof and Harley doesn't have a line and has to run down like 4 flights of stairs. It's got Bane. It does a lot of stuff with Harley and Ivy and sort of their relationship. If you like the cartoon, you will probably like this book.
I was flipping through it and I was like, "What? They ran with that profanity rating. There's F bombs aplenty."
Yes, there are.
I saw her giant plant.
There's a new Hellboy in Love. This is a new Hellboy series with Mike Mignola writing, Christopher Golden co-writing. And an artist, Matt Smith, who really looks a lot like Mignola's stuff, I think. I think the artwork is really good here. So it is starts on a train with some little goblins, and then Hellboy winds up working with some girl in a New York baseball cap that I'm going to guess he falls in love with because of the title.
Okay.
There's a new miniseries, Deadly Neighborhood Spider-Man. Really pretty art by Juan Ferreira. Who did the Killmonger series and a few other things. It's almost sort of painty looking. It looks like he's having nightmares, and I thought this was going to be like the Demon Bear. I'm still not sure it's not.
You're talking about the Demon Bear from New Mutants?
Yeah.
I think it is the Demon Bear.
Is it that Demon Bear?
Yes.
Okay.
Thanks for spoiling it, Randy.
Okay.
Yeah, spoiler for everyone.
he is on one of the covers.
Yes.
I think there's a variant cover.
He's on the cover.
Or at least what looked like the Demon Bear. Yeah, I wasn't sure either.
Well, that's why I wasn't sure, because he's in the middle and it's like a bear.
I was looking at that one in the middle, Randy, and I saw that and I was like, yeah, it's just Spider-Man versus a bear.
But maybe it's the Demon Bear. We don't know.
Well, yeah.
No. Okay, Nick feels pretty certain it is.
Yes.
It looks very cool.
And Spidey and Supernatural stuff is not something... Like, and this is like definitely a kind of a darker supernatural story. It's a little unusual for Spidey.
Yes.
It's a miniseries?
It's a miniseries.
Okay.
Yeah. And then Marvel has Crypt of Shadows, which is their Halloween special. It's got, five different stories and interstitials with Doctor Strange's weird brother, Victor Strange.
Victor.
He lives in the half-world behind every mirror.
I think I've seen that guy.
Yeah, well, he's in every mirror.
He looked a lot like me, actually.
Oh, that's just you.
Boo.
That's Mirror Dave.
I'll get that guy.
There were some fun little
like,
one-shots
who are the other characters in it?
So these stories, there's a Moon Knight story, there's a couple Werewolf by Night stories, Man-Thing makes an appearance...
Yep.
Morbius makes an appearance. All your standard Marvel.
It's all the people who have had shows and stuff. It's Morbius and Man-Thing and Werewolf by Night.
Yep.
I think my particular favorite was the Elsa Bloodstone, Johnny Storm and Spider-Man story.
That's fun.
That was a fun story.
Even though it's the Elsa Bloodstone styled on Next Wave, Randy?
No, I didn't read it.
okay.
But she's a fun character.
All right, that's
but
true.
But there's also an Adam Warren story that features Man-Thing and Laura, X-23, Wolverine.
It's that one was like... It was a little goofy, like it's as far as like sort of the narration was a little meta, but as a premise, it's like creepy Black Mirror style, which is not unfitting for Man Thing. He is a weird, otherworldly being, so.
And then we had Miracle Man number 0 a couple weeks ago. This week it is Miracle Man: The Silver Age number 1, which is this is just a reprint of Neil Gaiman and Mark Buckingham's series that they did a long time ago.
Yeah, it is, but is the formal beginning of like the new books.
I was going to say they never finished it, and so this is sort of your chance to get on before they finish it out.
Right, it's the whole reason Marvel got the license was to do new stories with Miracle Man and like wrap up the story that Alan Moore started in the 80s.
Yep.
And Neil Gaiman basically he only did like 2 issues from what I understand in the 90s that would have been. You know, when he was planning to wrap it up, and then it got all tied up in legalities and stuff for a while. So now, here we are, like, 25, 30 years later, whatever it is, and he's going to get to do it. But first, they are doing the stories that he did produce with it's the artist of Fables, right?
Yeah, Mark Buckingham.
Yep.
Mark Buckingham doing some amazing art,
and
frankly.
He's doing the new stuff, too.
Yep, yeah. It'll just be his current style, and this is whatever he was drawing like in 1992.
You don't think
or
he'll
whatever.
Go back to the style?
And it's pretty hard for artists to go back to the style. He may try to, but I bet it's still going to look more like
Fables. You
hear
that, Mark? Dave's challenging you.
he'll be like, you know what he'd say? If he were here, I guarantee you he's like, I can't go back to drawing as bad as I used to. Every artist is their own worst critic. They always think their older stuff was worse. Yep. And so, yeah.
God, this is gorgeous looking. If he called that his worst stuff. I'm
yeah,
like,
he's like, that's trash. only trashy people would even like it.
There's
a few
comics that I always enjoy this week. Moon Knight came a new issue. Second issue of the new Alien series. New issue of Chip Zdarsky's Public Domain over at Image. Shirtless Bear Fighter 2,
that's
number 3.
Great.
And 10,000 Black Feathers, which is part of the Bone Orchard mythos of... Jeff Lemire and Andrea Sorrentino.
I really enjoyed that issue. It kind of had like Die vibes.
Okay.
What's that? Kieran Gillen's book.
Yeah,
for
Kieran
Image.
Gillen's.
Story within a story kind of stuff.
What you've got is, I guess, just to quick make it like it. You have the adult versions of the characters as sort of a framing story. You have the younger two character versions of them. It was two girls meeting up and forming an unlikely friendship
in
high school, right?
Yeah, and then, well, creating a little before high school and then creating kind of this RPG world that they are playing in a little bit.
And
tapping into some sort of, like, ethereal plane kind of something behind it.
There's definitely
kind of a Lovecraftian
this world being alive or meta living in
and
some
then
way.
They hit high school and things their paths start to diverge a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I'm really enjoying this. I sometimes find the Sorrentino's artwork a little shaky, but I like the vibe he gives the book.
Yeah, there's a few scenes where I was like, this particular action sequence or suspenseful sequence was a little hard to follow, but like most of the moment-to-moment stuff and the atmosphere of it
is
quite good.
Creepy looking.
They are.
Yeah. Then DC's Rogues finishes out this week. It's been a long delay, and I think the art took a while to get done. But this is the big Flash's Rogues pull a heist in Gorilla City. Dark story. That wrapped up this week, so that is the fourth issue comes in. And then in the trade paperback area, we've got Arden High 12th Grade Night, which is a teenage, queer-friendly take on Romeo and Juliet. It's like a modern day. They're maybe not just Juliet, but all Shakespeare. It's
I was going to say, I feel like Romeo and Mercutio thing is probably a fanfic that has already been thought of for a while and should be. But yeah, I assume it's, you know, I have no idea if that's part of it, but there's lots more they could do.
This is the school's 12th grade night dance.
Okay.
And so it's like Vi's friend assumes she's not into guys, and so yeah, there's a whole bunch of different stuff going on. It's like a little romance. It's Shakespeare riffs. It's not a Romeo and Juliet story. Then we've got the Illuminati. Bendis' Illuminati is back in print. This is the characters that were introduced in the MCU in Multiverse of Madness. And then Tom Taylor's Dark Ages, his post-apocalyptic technology failing world.
Yeah, basically all the technology and electricity fails, and the Marvel heroes kind of enter, you know, their world hits a new sort of dark age, and he advances the timeline, I think, what, a few years at
that
point?
Quite a few, like 10 or 15.
Yeah, and then you kind of see how things play out. Who does what? You know, what would your heroes do in an apocalypse?
Yeah, it's really fun.
What does Iron Man do without all his tech?
And it's sort of a positive post-apocalypse. Like, they rebuilt society better, which is interesting.
That's the goal.
And then Radiant Black, Image's superhero story, which is mixed with Power Rangers, gets its third volume. I think we're always really enjoying that.
Yep, that's a good series. On it now.
And then there's this book, Marvel Anatomy, which is a big, giant hardcover with anatomical cutaway illustrations from an artist on Skyrim and Fallout.
And there's notes from... did we discern, Randy or Nick, is it Shuri and, like, Black Panther?
Yeah, Shuri and Black Panther. Yeah. It's sort of their dossier.
And so it's kind of fun. It's like, oh, here's what Reed Richards looked like a cutaway see-through view of him while he's stretching and his internal organs are bending. Here's how the Thing's arm looks and where the plates end and, like, the... You know, muscle tissue and stuff below that begins.
The meat begins.
There's even a cutaway view of Daredevil's head showing, I think, like the, you know, the new gland in the brain that creates the, you know, or maybe it's in the ears that does the radar sense. Venom is in there and it shows how the costume interacts. Like, it's kind of, you know, the fun pseudoscience of Marvel. For those who read the old official handbook of the Marvel Universe back in the day, I'm sure you remember those beautiful technical drawings that Elliot R. Brown did, where he would do a cutaway view of, like, here's, you know, how Wolverine's skeleton looks, or the Punisher's van, and he did all these detailed things. Well, this is kind of like the biological equivalent of that, kind of looking into a little bit of the science of these heroes and you know, kind of how it affects their anatomy. It's a fun thing. I feel like it's a good little weird holiday book, and it's just kind of a cool thing if you're just a Marvel fan in general.
I will say the art is very, very cool looking.
It is. If you just type in Marvel Anatomy, you can see some samples online.
All right, I think that's it for comics for the week, and we'll be back in just a moment to talk about some TV and movies and other stuff. All right, so we wanted to talk about a couple of big shows that just ended, She-Hulk and Rings of Power. So if you're not caught up, you might want to skip ahead a little bit.
Can't help but get into spoiler territory.
We're going to get into spoiler territory. It's just going to happen. So,
do we want to go ahead and say what else we're going to be covering?
I'm going to break down the times again so that people don't have to worry about spoilers.
Right on.
If you look at the time codes, we'll tell you exactly what we're talking about She-Hulk. So when we're talking about She-Hulk, don't we talk about Rings of Power? When we're talking about Rings of Power, nobody talk about She-Hulk.
We got to follow the timeline.
It's fine. Follow the timeline. Do not break the streams. Do not spoilers for She-Hulk. Break through, climb outside the menu, and swing back in to go talk to Kevin.
Famously, back in the first meta comic that She-Hulk was in, that John Byrne did, what was it, like 1990, 91, 92, somewhere in there? There's a thing where she's like, the bad guys have escaped and she's like, gotta catch up. And so she like tears through the pages of the comic, and then you flip a page and it's one of those old ads they used to have for like Mile High Comics, where you had a bunch of price listings for comics, and she's like running over the price listings and stuff like that. And then she tears through the other side of the page and she comes out and she's like gotten ahead of them. Just a very ridiculous meta joke, but that is exactly the kind of weirdness that happened in the finale of She-Hulk.
Uh-huh.
All the talking to the audience, kind of Riley, came to a culmination as she got onto the Disney Plus menu.
And decided to go talk to her actual writers in the writer room.
Because right as the big climax was about to happen, it looked like... she had discovered... let's see, what had happened? The incels who had, like, sort of done revenge porn stuff on her, one of them had stolen some of her blood and hulked out himself. The Abomination, Emil Blonsky, was there. He abominationed out.
Then Bruce, Hulk showed up.
Hulk Bruce shows up, and he hulks out.
And then Titania bursts through.
And then Titania bursts through, and she's, like, not
wait
having
a,
it. She's
wait
like,
a
this is getting messy.
And, yeah. And indeed, like, what she does is when she goes to, like, the Marvel Studios and wants to talk to Kevin, which you might... think would be Kevin Feige, but it turns out to be the acronym Kevin. Well, yes. Does anybody know what it stands for?
I don't remember.
It's very MODOK-ish.
Kind yeah.
of. But rewinding just a little bit, the writer's room is actually the writer's room. That was Zeb great. Wells and Margaret Gao.
That's funny.
It was really cool.
So I would say I have seen at least one person who did not like this. He's a pro comics writer, and he was like, I have a real low tolerance for fourth wall breaking. You have to really earn it. And he's like, I felt like this
they
was
had
basically
built up for like five episodes.
Yeah, but I think he was liking up to that point. He's like, I feel like they cheated us out of a real ending. And
well, so
I understand that point of view.
Yep.
But I think all three of us really, and most of the people I read really liked this, and I think it's a perfect ending for it.
I
do think they were.
I have a tweak or two to suggest, and I don't completely disagree with him. Or at least there's at least something I think we would overlap on.
I do think that the one of the issues is that I did want a resolution to the whole intelligentsia thing.
Yeah, I'm going to just quick say, that's true, which was their equivalent of a Reddit incel board.
I wanted to be a little bigger than it was just a bunch of weird losers on the internet. Like those were our
when she eventually talks to Kevin.
Yeah.
Kevin proves to be, it's almost a spoof of certain, like the sort of joke that people say about Marvel movies being too similar having a kind of homogenous thing.
There's an artificial intelligence that runs everything, yes.
Yeah, an artificial intelligence runs everything, and she was like, I am not going to have a big dumb CG fight like too many of these Marvel movies do.
Yeah.
And that, like, that was like, that's pretty fun, that allows them to really poke fun at themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But once it is all resolved and things go back to the real world, it's like basically they're in the denouement phase. And I think I was talking about it with our staffer, John, and I was like, I didn't want the big CG battle that she got out that she was like, no. But I did want some sort of more dramatic resolution going on with Emil and the intelligentsia people and stuff like that.
Yeah, I wanted more of that.
Knowledge enhanced visual interconnectivity nexus.
That's Kevin for you.
I did love all the stuff she's throwing. She's like, oh wait a minute, when are we going to see the X-Men?
With a thumbs up and a wink to the audience.
Yeah.
But also like the kind of sharp jabs of like all the daddy issues. Star-Lord's got two daddy issues.
Oh yeah, she calls out. Yeah, she basically calls out Kevin Feige, but robot in this case. For things that Marvel repeats and some of their weird issues, which really, you know, that's not just the MCU. That a lot
everything
of that
has that.
A lot of that comes from the comics themselves.
Yeah.
But you know, it's if you can't do a fourth wall breaking without actually doing some self critique in the mix, then you probably missed an opportunity. So I thought it was cool that they did it. They did it in such a way that she wasn't like Marvel sucks, but she's like she was poking at it.
It was fun.
I actually misinterpreted something, Randy. I thought that Blonsky was revealed to have like been with the intelligentsia.
No, he wasn't. Yeah.
He was just doing like a paid speaking engagement.
Yeah,
and so I had missed that, and I was like, man, they threw him under the bus. He had been one of the fun characters with his reformation.
No, that reformation was true. He was the thing that he did. The thing that was breaking his parole was he was getting up there and tearing up the abomination for his motivational speaking.
Yes.
Yeah.
Instead of just being Emil Blonsky.
Right. And that's fine. I was wondering why they would have like revealed links to the intelligentsia only to have him sort of rescued in the post-credit sequence by Wong or taken by him.
Yeah.
And that we'd be like, why would we be happy about that in this case?
Yeah.
But yes, if he's the cool guy that I've been enjoying the whole time, like a doofus but cool, then I am happy.
He just got booked for he needed the money for his retreat, and so he got booked by these jerks.
And even Wong's little we're in peak TV season, that's why he took so long.
Yeah,
it was very amusing.
Yeah,
I would say I was quite happy with it. I might have wanted a few other things, but overall, I think it's a successful first season. I hope it does get a second season.
I hope we get a second season because I want, for one thing. We didn't get enough Pug, and we didn't get enough Nikki.
Right.
Yeah. I do think they could use some more development.
I do think it's hilarious that they made some reference. Like, she's like, I'm a She-Hulk. I smash bad plots,
and sometimes
Matt Murdock.
That's great.
She's like, eight, and I like Daredevil. Can we have him back in? She basically, and he just drops out of nowhere.
Yep.
And comes and meets the family. Like, that was super fun.
That was wonderful.
Yeah.
And we even got Scar.
Even got Scar. Wow.
Right.
That was... I never expected to see that character.
I mean, that they...
So Kevin got his way a little bit.
And for people who don't know, Scar is the Hulk's son from the Planet Hulk storyline.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or that's kind Sakaar. Of where he comes from.
Yep.
Yep. And they kind of like, almost as like a bone to fans who have been doing, sometimes the critical fans, I suppose,
yep.
who have been like, just waiting for the Daredevil stuff, just looking for the the meta plot stuff. At one point, Hulk shows up, and he's just got his, he's like, oh yeah, it's my son Scar.
Well, I mean, it makes sense, too, because the Hulk was, he was the Hulk for 2 or 3 years there.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And there's been like 5 or 10 years since, right? Yep. So it makes sense, they do a little bit of time jumpy, a little bit of like weird
time Sakaar. Works different on
yeah.
Sakaar.
They can actually totally make that work.
Yep, and now that's like another thing that they'll, I'm sure, be working on
yep.
and have been working on. We just didn't know it.
Yeah, I feel like I keep saying that their shows get better and better, but I feel like this is definitely on the top.
Also, much as I love all the TV shows, this was the best of the shows.
Yeah, I think Tatiana Maslany was.
I don't have like strong feelings between them. Like I like they do because I think one of their qualities is that they're also different.
But,
it's hard for me to say compare. Scarlet Witch to Loki to this. As far as like which I enjoyed the most, it might actually have been She-Hulk.
Yeah, because I was gonna ask, like, this one feels like it hit the landing.
Yeah.
I think on a lot of the other ones you have said that you're just kind of like
disappointed in the to be continued ending of Loki.
Yeah,
there was too many CG fights in the WandaVision.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have preferred She-Hulk actually as come and butt stop that one. But anyway, what else we got?
Then we're going to talk about Rings of Power. So, spoilers for Rings of Power.
Big
if you
spoilers.
Haven't seen it.
Major spoilers. The whole season has
yes.
been building to
yes.
this. And really, there's been kind of two questions as far as like mysteries. Of
who is
the
tall man and who is Sauron and is it the same person?
Right. And the, yeah, there was the Starman, as they called him. He had fell from the sky. And then there's and we knew Sauron was gonna appear at some point. And there's that old dude who was like the traitorous guy. He's like, "Have you heard about Sauron?" That early on,
yeah,
they wanted
great.
You to be wondering about
oh,
it.
Yeah.
And they've there were many people who had shown up. And early on, the guy who was like one of the proto orcs, the twisted elves, he was one of those. And that guy like called him Lord Sauron, and he looked at him like, "Are you kidding me?"
And then Adar even says he killed Sauron.
Yeah, which will
she did not.
He did not. Actually, he might have, in kind of a sense of like dethroning Sauron
right.
from the power. That's
yeah.
that's why
Adar is still alive at the end of
yes.
this, right? So
yes, he is,
and he was a good character, so I expect to see more of him. But anyway, all is revealed. And in fact, the two people who seemed like the best candidates for Sauron, the one best candidate for Sauron, best candidate for Gandalf or a wizard
yep,
anyway,
yep.
yeah,
did prove to be who they were, and I was glad because both of them it was a neat kind of a neat fit, and in particular the person who where people were like, I bet that's Gandalf, maybe it's Gandalf, oh, but maybe it's not, maybe it's Sauron. They even did a fake out in this final episode.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was such a neat idea that early on when he was acclimating to being human, that he had this confusion and that it was the hobbits who helped him, the proto-hobbits, the Harfoots.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I was like, oh, that's such a neat way to tie it into how close he's always been with the hobbits when we know kind of all of Middle-earth ignores them,
yep.
but he doesn't.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, it would be disappointing if it wasn't. But they did it, and I was pretty happy with it. What about you guys?
Yeah, same. I mean,
yeah.
I loved all that. I thought the kind of the action sequence that we got
yeah.
in this episode
pretty
that,
scary. These hobbits are not fighters,
right?
But they're not nothing. But
these trio of sycophant Sauron worshippers.
Yeah, they're like there to try and find Sauron and assist in his ascendancy.
Yes,
yes.
They're supposed to find him. Do whatever they need to help him, and they think this is him.
I thought the shape-changing stuff was particularly great.
What was the shape-changing stuff?
One of them changed into the Meteor Man, but also
oh, right.
One turned into
oh, yeah.
Not Poppy, but the other...
Yeah.
Nori.
Yeah.
Nori, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was unnerving because you didn't quite know what was going on,
yeah.
and then suddenly things are very bad.
But just the visualization of her, like crawling up and kind of like changing was really cool.
They made them scary.
Yeah.
They were very scary. And it was also that much cooler when, let's presume that he is Gandalf, because he did use a quote from him.
Yep.
And although he's shown his, you know, some affinity for nature magic, that could be Radagast the Brown, or he could be one of the blue wizards that have been talked of.
Could even be Saruman when he originally showed up.
It could even be. But the affinity for fire is a Gandalf thing. And also, he said, he used a line that Gandalf says in the Peter Jackson movies.
Yeah,
and so it would be weird to dangle that and it not be him. So yeah. I think that's probably Gandalf.
Well, that's a big fake out.
But he does show up and he does some hot shit magic stuff.
He does.
Which is a little tricky because in Lord of the Rings, their wizards aren't real demonstrative. They're not D&D wizards. They don't do one spell after another with lightning and stuff like that.
Sure.
But yeah, they you know, controlling the natural world around them and stuff like that was a big thing.
Yeah, the small bits of magic just over all the last couple of episodes, like healing the tree and like
that
the
orchard.
That
was super cool. They made these experiences seem really amazing.
Yeah. And it wasn't like an immediate thing. It definitely
took
like... I felt
so bad, by the way, when that orchard got like burned down or whatever.
Yeah.
Because it was like, oh, that was his big sort of miraculous thing.
Well, it wasn't just the orchard. It was all of the Harfoot's like caravans.
Yeah.
Like, it literally was like the destruction of their way of life
in
a lot of ways.
It was messed up.
It really was like, these three people are evil.
They are bad, 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 bad. Speaking of bad, let's go ahead and talk about Sauron.
You mean Halbrand?
Halbrand. He was an early guest. He was a smith,
yep,
like Sauron. He had a dark side. We knew that he could go violent, even though he seemed kind of collected most of the time.
He talked about creating or giving your opponent the thing they want in order to rule them.
He straight up told Galadriel how to manipulate people when she was, because she's been hot-headed.
I really kind of want to rewatch this,
knowing and
watching all of sort of the things that he drops.
And in short, one of the kind of I think sort of invented problems of this is that the elves sort of fading away, which is sort of what will happen eventually in, like, you know, Frodo's time.
Right.
But that it's like was going to happen earlier, and the rings of power that the elves forge are kind of what keeps that from happening. And so that the backstory that's been going on running through most of the series of the elves trying to get Elrond to use his friendship with Durin to get them Mithril,
mm-hmm,
which has properties that they need to create like an item or something to secure their presence on the physical world. They haven't been able to do it. It fell apart. I thought there was some great stuff, the way those fell apart.
Well, the conversation between Durin and King Durin. And basically...
Durin and his wife, where he breaks down crying.
That actor who's playing the young Durin is phenomenal. I mean, so is the guy playing King
Arguably
Durin.
Amidst a number of actors doing a great job, especially Galadriel, probably. But even, like, I think the guy playing Gandalf was doing a good job.
Yeah.
But, like, Durin, I feel like, has to... He and Elrond both, their bromance has been...
Oh, yeah.
Something I never expected to see, and I really liked. But, yes, that thing fell through when the dwarf-elf potential alliance fell through. And so... Although, and I know this is playing havoc with the timelines, I do know that some of the people behind the scenes are like, this is just fanfic and whatever.
Yeah.
I
didn't realize how much some people hated this show until I looked at some of the online reviews of it from fans.
Oh, man.
And I'm just like, oh, God.
Yeah, they... I mean, you know, I can kind of understand it. You know, Tolkien is like...
Well, the one thing I don't
understand... is beloved at, like, a level that few things are.
The one thing I don't understand is, like, people are like, this is such bad writing. And I'm like, some of this writing is, like...
There's been some great writing.
Yeah, the writing is, like, particularly amazing in spots.
In the first episode or two, I didn't quite catch what their pacing and style of writing was going to be like, which is a little lofty. Like, sometimes people talk, not quite in these and thous, but it's not real casual. There's a lot of kings and queens and stuff in there. But, like, especially I think when they got to Durin and Elrond, some of the stuff they said, I almost got chills from it.
Yeah.
Like, it was so good, and it reminded me of the Peter Jackson movies.
Like, Elrond, you know, vowing to keep the secret, or you know,
the swear on the stone.
The swear on the stone was fantastic.
A lot of great exchanges in it, you know, memorable moments.
And this one, this episode, the last episode, gave us a few other really memorable... I mean, basically the mindscape Galadriel and Sauron explanation of, like, oh, well, you could be my queen, and we will rule together.
Right?
And it almost gave me the feel like that Sauron really not loves Galadriel, but you know,
does he just love the power dynamic she would bring to him?
Right, yeah. And that's sort of, but they're kind of intersecting those things, and I was like, interesting.
I don't want to say they have made the orcs sympathetic. I think you brought this up the other day, Nick, but they have made them more rounded.
Yeah,
part of it is Adar and his like their almost love of him is like a fatherly figure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even though it's this rather dark and, you know, he's like a fascistic figure, obviously.
Well, I was saying that they're at least showing aspects of everyone being kind of both good and evil.
Yeah.
I mean, the orcs and goblins are not
They're pretty bad.
But you get more of an understanding of where they're coming from.
They don't just seem to be only evil all the time. Right? Yeah. It seems like they might do some other things. Talking about other things.
I mean, that they want just a place that they can, you know, walk amongst the, like...
Can't walk in the daylight, but yeah, like, now that they have... I mean, the big reveals in this season at the end were pretty cool. They ignited Mount Doom.
Yep.
The tunnels that they were digging were not just tunnels for, like, orc sabotage and attacks, but to channel, like, a river into the volcano, and they cause this superheated explosion of stuff, and, like, create Mordor. I almost thought it was cheesy, and yet I also thought it was cool when they show this vast vista now that we had known as the Southlands,
and the
logo faded away and Mordor fades in over it.
I was like, it's a little cheesy, I agree.
The same exact mix of feelings, like, that's cheesy, but it's also kind of cool.
It is kind of cool, though.
Yeah.
And you know, the creation of Mordor didn't need to be a big reveal, but that is what the show has... That is the territory at stake that. If you don't like that, you don't really like the show.
Yeah.
It's okay. It doesn't have to be for everyone.
No.
But if you're kind of... If you can get on board, that was a dope-ass reveal that he, like, stealth-created freaking Mordor.
Yeah.
As a homeland. He actually created, like, with this plan that must have, like, taken hundreds of years to set up, essentially, the creation of it. And so it ends with the forging of the Elven Rings... Am I correct that Galadriel thought that by making three rings that she would kind of break what was...
Well, it was basically, I think they said one would
Sauron
just be straight up rule, two, one could be swayed, three, there would always be a balance.
A balance of power. And I thought that was a neat idea, that it wasn't just, just three is a good number, we just did that.
Yeah.
Nick, did you point out... That we don't know, or doesn't seem like Galadriel told them that was Sauron?
I don't think she outright did. The only one who has any suspicions is Elrond, who found the same scroll that she had found, depicting that the king's line died, like, a thousand years ago.
Right.
And there was no man who would be king of the Southlands.
Not telling people that the Dark Lord of Sauron had tricked them into making rings and had barely been outwitted, seemingly.
But that feels like...
It's a pretty messed up thing, but we know she's bent on revenge.
Yeah, we know that Galadriel is, like, depicted as very kind of, like... I mean, if she was said to...
You know, she's like, this is my fight. Oh, that is her thing with Sauron.
But also how she would feel, the other elves would feel like, oh, so you've sided with Sauron and you've led him into our city.
Yeah, we talked about this with when she talks in Lord of the Rings about how she did this great crime that she... And we're always like, what was her crime? Like, just jumping off the boat? Like, what exactly? But no, she basically brought Sauron back.
Yep.
Yeah. Her the thing that they feared, her diehard pursuit of him.
And his saying of, like, I never lied to you.
Who bears responsibility for the creation of Mordor? Did anybody do that, or did they... That was just their plan happening as intended.
Yeah.
But did anybody facilitate it? She brought back Halbrand.
Yeah.
She brought Halbrand in.
I feel like Sauron set that up. I think he honestly had gone wherever he was, be that Rule or one of the other lands that they had.
Rune, or
any of the other lands where he'd kind of gone to lick his wounds after Adar had not killed him, but definitely depowered him.
Dethroned him, or, yeah, whatever.
And this notion that he was trying to heal Middle Earth, but, you know, through power, and you're now under my control. I think he went to Numenor to try to see if he could be something else.
See, that's the weird thing. I'm not quite sure about that. I assume if it was season two, we will hear.
Yeah, we're definitely
that kind of thing.
But I like that idea that Sauron was basically saying, "Okay, maybe I can do a do-over a little bit. And then, of course, cycles repeat, so...
Well, he definitely had set up the ring, the Mordor thing sometime
yes.
back. The flood thing had to have been prepared long
ago. And had
advance.
Given the key to do that to yeah. His followers.
The season two, I think, we're pretty sure is going to go to Rune, probably.
Yes, because that's and where...
Randy, do you know about Rune?
I don't know what that is.
It is one of the least known places in Tolkiendom. Like, it's barely written about in the books, but it's the home of the Easterlings. I'm going to say somewhat racial stereotyped, the dark men of the East, who were the people with the Oliphants and stuff.
They were essentially mercenaries, is really all we know them as in Return of the King.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they were, again, this is why I say sort of vaguely racist. It's almost like a sense like, oh, that over there is where the Eastern people are, you know, like the Huns. And so I just hired them, and they're some of the heavy guns in the Return of the King.
Was it J.D. Patrick and I forget the other guy, something Payne. The guys who showrunners and direct this. They will give them a
I have a feeling this will be a time to show them as a civilization with depth.
Yes.
The same way that the Numenoreans were shown for the first time ever with sort of some depth.
Yeah.
I was very pleased with this season.
I was too. I think I'm kind of maybe glad I haven't read the Silmarillion because I might be bothered by like vast changes to it, to the canon, or I know it's all also from the appendix notes and stuff like that too. They can't really do the Silmarillion.
I liked it. I don't think I'm as into it as y'all are.
Yeah.
Would you say you're more or less into it? You're more into it than Wheel of Time, right?
Yes.
As far as like fantasy shows
And House of the Dragon.
On
if
Amazon.
I was ranking the shows that
and House of the Dragon.
If I'm ranking the shows that I sort of watch, but I don't care about that much,
yep.
I like this best of those shows.
Okay.
It's right above Andor and well above House of the Dragon, which I haven't finished yet.
I have, by the way, heard mostly pretty good stuff on House of the Dragon.
It's gotten really good.
I'm probably going to watch the rest of it.
I think I'm going to do like a November catch-up.
Yeah, I figured I would catch up to it, but I just haven't been in a hurry to.
But like you, Nick, I was pretty excited about this show. Andor might have actually somewhat stolen its thunder in its kind of strangely understated way.
Well,
but,
the mid-season... basically,
and it's still in the mid-season.
Yeah, but the sixth episode of Andor was phenomenal.
It was freaking good.
It was really good.
I also learned something. I guess the professor, the Tolkien professor.
Yeah.
I don't know if he teamed up with Amazon, but he actually does like a breakdown of every episode.
Who does the podcast?
Is that? I'm not sure.
I don't podcast, know. So. There's like an after show. You mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, he does, like, a video, like, podcast breakdown of, like, every episode.
I don't know how... He already has made, like, hundreds of podcasts focusing on every single one of the books, lectures from his class, other returns to them to focus on different things, poems, back matter series. He's talked about the video games that are associated with them. I don't know where he finds the time, but I find his scholarship is always good.
Well, this will be my first introduction to him, because I'm going to start listening to him.
Quick word of warning. I know my brother has been listening to this. There is some heavy theorizing, and, like, you might find out things you don't want to know.
Well, that's the thing.
But I think you are behind this. You don't mind that stuff as
much. I like that, because for that kind of, like, guessing, I feel like I'm part of something of the show as it grows, regardless of
it. But then I can't talk to you, Nick. Because you'll know information, and then anything you say about it will be informed by your secret dark knowledge, just like Sauron.
You mean I looked into a Palantir? And...
Yes, and that's gonna be a thing too. The Palantir has been revealed.
Well, the Numenor. We didn't even talk about Numenor.
Yeah, there's too much to really get into it. But yeah, big stuff is afoot in Numenor.
All right, let's talk about spooky stuff because it is still Halloween.
Yes.
And I've got a few more weeks.
I've fallen behind in my spooky watching.
Me too. Although I think this week I'll be able to do some catch up.
Yeah,
I did watch an older one I haven't seen, and I did watch, we'll talk about Hellraiser. Before we talk about that, Dave and I had our in-person spooky stuff though. We went to local Scare for a Cure.
Yeah, Scare for a Cure is like a sort of like one of those commercial haunted houses, but it's not commercial. It's an all-volunteer organization raising money primarily for breast cancer awareness and research and stuff, but I think also for some other cancer stuff too.
Yeah, most of it goes to breast cancer awareness, but there's a couple charities that are in Buda? No. Manor, sure. Manor where yeah. it takes place. Yeah.
Yeah, and they what they do is they've got these all these facades and warehouses and things like that out at a they call it the a ghost town, the gold ghost town, and I'm sure they I know they use it during the year also for their D&D type one quest night.
Quest night, yep.
But yes, they do a yearly sort of interactive haunted house. It's not unlike the commercial haunted houses. Except that it's a little more interactive, and you get blood sprayed on you. This is like
lots
one of their
blood.
Big things. Randy, you got way more than I did, and I was disappointed,
I got
frankly.
Coated in blood.
And
it's
you
soaked through my underwear
you will,
and my
don't
socks.
Stand in front of the blood fan.
I didn't mean to.
You will look like, at the end, like a final girl.
Yeah.
And that is pretty cool,
yeah.
Because when else are you going to get that opportunity?
I still love the story you told last year about...
Driving home
and, like, the cop...
Oh, my God, yeah.
So
that was because I had to take off my bloody pants.
So I was... we were still in our bloody clothes and stuff. Tank, one of our staffers' partners,
yep.
was with me. And as we're pulling up to the light right by my house, a cop, like, pulled next to us. And I felt like he was, like, instead of going all the way, I felt like he was sitting next to us. And I'm like, oh, please don't let him be looking over here and thinking what's going on in that car.
Yeah, he thinks he's about to collar Dahmer
yeah.
over here.
Yeah.
So this year's Scare for Cure, basically, you go in groups of about six people usually. And we were able to put together one of the larger groups we've had done before. We had about 10 people.
Yep.
And that's one full group and a partial group. And then they had a few other people join our other group. And we went in, and it's this year the theme was vampires. It was actually a sequel, I guess, to one that they had done way back in like 2009 or so. They sometimes follow up the storylines of previous Scare for a Cure years.
Callback.
I know. But they do their zombie thing every few years yeah. and all that. So in this one, we are theoretically trainees and for Rippers, which is it's an acronym for something
yep.
It's an anti-vampire group.
Yep.
And after the little sort of training sequence where they usually... This is just kind of waiting for other groups to finish out, to get ahead of you. They give you a little bit of advice. We found out that one of the daughter... this is all the fiction, the lore
yeah.
of it.
Mm-hmm.
That the daughter, the teenage daughter of one of them... of one of the members of Rippers was apparently down there maybe doing some pranks, maybe being a... She was like a... seemed like a bad girl ne'er-do-well. But they're like, if you find her, please bring her back. So then we go in, and let's see. I guess essentially, what was it? What was it that we were going into? Was it a? It was an underground thing. It was like a tomb, but what was it? What is it actually supposed to be? We were inside.
Oh,
like a mausoleum type thing.
Well, no, they did say we were talking about a mausoleum, but they took us somewhere. We didn't know where we were.
Yeah, because you get in like sort of a little bus sort of thing. And it gets hijacked
yep.
by the daughter.
Oh, okay.
She is like part of like this coven of like witches and like vampire acolytes that are resurrecting the vampires down there. There's demonic forces that they're involved in. And essentially we end up in these underground catacombs and tunnels and stuff like that, which are the warehouses and stuff. But they're all made up with like, they've got sigils, there's cobwebs everywhere, there's vampire rooms, there's mad scientist stuff going on. You crawl through tunnels, it's a little more physical than I
yeah.
guess most
yeah,
other haunted
it is.
Houses.
It is, yeah.
I'm trying to think. Some of the things that we did before the final gory confrontation with the vampire lord, who, by the way, looked very cool. I had a little trouble understanding him with his voice distortion thing. Do you know what I'm talking about, Randy? Oh, y'all... No, your group went in, and he was monologuing at the end, Nick. And we had, at that point, it's like a Staff of Ra type thing.
Yeah.
Like
yeah, one of the
Jones.
Group has a staff. One of our randos had our staff.
Oh.
And she didn't let the guy monologue at all. She went right to it.
Oh.
Right. Whereas, like, the previous year when I was there, when there was... It was about cannibalistic prisoners in a prison, a high-tech prison where they had taken over. That year, I had the key card that would potentially stop the big bad guy or make him vulnerable to attack, and he was monologuing, and then meanwhile the clock timer was counting down for like there was a minute left before like the whole place would blow up, and I was like, hold on, I want to hear what he's got to say, and the rest of my group is like, put the key card in. I let it get to about 20 seconds, and then I did it.
This actor is monologuing. He learned this.
I want to let them monologue.
Yeah.
Yep. Randy, any sort of standout bits for you? Do you remember the room where you walk through and there's all these entrails hanging from the ceiling?
That, oh man, that was creepy. Yeah, that was very effective.
They're very cold. Yeah. Like it looks like intestines and guts and stuff hanging.
And also, it's cool. Also, hands and legs.
And it's
all
smearing against you
and
while you go
covered
between
in
them.
Blood. So you reach like, oh, this one's wet.
Yeah.
yeah. But also, no, the thing that got me is that at one point you cross over another dimension.
Oh, right. And there's like
the
a portal.
The way they simulate this is there's the wall is like colored, it's like colored lights and stuff.
Yeah, it's like you're going through like a cylindrical tunnel that is, I think, the tunnel around you is, I think, on something that spins. And it had like lights projected on it. Maybe the lights were just moving.
I think this thing you're on a little
like a
walkway
little,
with rails.
Yeah, almost like a little bridge.
And you're walking across. And
it
the lights
feels
are moving
like it's
and
turning.
It feels like it's moving. It gives you this vertigo. Oh, it's very cool.
It's super intense. Yeah, it's like a crazy club light show making you feel like you're going through another portal.
That's how
portal.
You cross into like your demon dimension. Your guide is like freaking out. He's like, we're definitely in a bad place now. And,
yeah. Yeah. At one point, we were in a room, I'm sure you experienced this, Randy, where there's all these coffins around and they all explode open at once and like four or five vampires came up.
So yes, before that happened...
It sounds like you have some of the story to tell about this.
Before that happened... The same rando who would eventually get the staff knocked on the coffins.
Oh no.
And the guy was like, "Why would you knock on the coffins?"
The guide.
The guide is the person from Scare. Who's
yeah.
Like the, but yeah, the guy was horrified that
that's hilarious.
That someone who's like,
"Hello?"
Yeah, they just knocked on the coffins. Yeah.
We did pass, they always like to use their prison set. We did pass people trapped in the prison as food for the vampires.
I got kidnapped.
And Randy, I don't know if you know, before you finish that, we had one person with us who was new to it, and she was, by her own admission, very easily scared. She was extremely nervous going into this, and we told her, we'll watch her back. She also got kidnapped.
So they separate one person out, and they say, "Hey, you're being kidnapped. You consent to this." And I think she was nervous at first, but went ahead and went with it. I was like, "Yeah, absolutely." And so they go, and they chain me up in another room. Now, we've set up code words with our buddies, because they've raised the specter that you might get possessed by ghosts, and if they do, ask them the code word because the ghost won't know it. So I had set up a code word with my buddy, but it was for a board. It was like we're using a board game. It was a board game he didn't remember. So when he got in, he forgot what the code name was. But he asked me what the code name was, and I had to like give it to him. And I'm like, "Man, you'd have been so screwed if I was a ghost."
Oh man.
But so yeah, so I got kidnapped. I was like handcuffed to the wall. There's a girl in a cage who's like the sacrifice.
Yep.
And what's funny is I was just kind of sitting there waiting for the people, because I'd been to this before, so I knew that the other group would hook up with me again.
Yes.
But I feel like I'm like I should have talked to the sacrifice a little bit while I was there. Like, "Hey, what are you doing here?" And like,
yeah,
I might have gotten some information.
That room where they had the sacrifices in the cage.
Yeah.
When we first go in there, and it's rather dimly lit, Nick. In most of these rooms.
Yeah.
There was like people in two kind of rusty cages, and like they were very immobile when I went in. They're real pale looking, kind of dusty, hands hanging out of the bars. And at first I thought, I'm like, I think those are fake. I don't think they're real people. And so naturally when you suddenly see them blink or move a little bit, it's very unnerving. But also there was the fun stuff. Eventually you do get to use the amulet you've gotten, and you put it like in the Staff of Ra kind of thing. And you learn some magic words. You had to learn the demon's true name.
Yep.
You find this guy who's been, like, held there and tortured for years. And, Randy, I don't know if you had this experience, but when you were talking to the old guy who'd been held there, you didn't talk to him.
Yeah.
He was kind of talking quietly, and we had to lean in close to listen. I was sure he was going to erupt in blood in some way.
Yeah.
But he did not.
Yeah.
But eventually, like, when you do take down the big vampire, yes, there's, like, he put, like, smoke poured from him and stuff like that. And then they hit you with, I don't know where they conceal
when
them.
You kill
they hit
the,
you with
the,
any,
you kill
the
vampires,
anything, blood cannons.
Blood cannon. I caught two big blood cannons. but also, Dave, we've just spoiled all of this, so hopefully people, it's already sold out. So if you were going to go to Scare, but hopefully if you were listening to this, we didn't just spoil this year's Scare for you.
I think that this is like...
That's an experience.
It's an experience, yeah. You would have a different thing going through anyway. We didn't really say. Nobody's going to remember the order that we described it in or anything like that.
Yeah.
And we didn't talk about any of the puzzles and things necessarily, and how you get past the puzzles. But
how do you get past the puzzles?
You have to line up the... No. anyway, it was fun. I believe next year they have a new guy running the show. The guy who had been running it is going to stay on hand and like help produce it, but he's no longer kind of like the showrunner of it. So he had a little sort of farewell video before we go in. We watch his little farewell video. And but that kind of makes me excited for next year to see, like, oh, well, what will the new guy do?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think people will.
And if you haven't done it before, when you come out all bloody, they take a few pictures of you, which they send to you to, like, I think probably the person who bought the tickets.
Oh, I haven't gotten mine yet.
I think it should come to me, and then I will forward it to y'all.
Because I had a bow. I found a little bow in their prop thing.
Yeah, so. you can pick props. I held a severed head. Other people had like machetes and knives and things like that. So when you can pose like you're the mighty heroes having survived the grand adventure.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun, and it's all for a good cause.
It's all for a good cause. They also, by the way, in spring do Quest Night, which is sort of the D&D version of it.
Maybe less fun, maybe not for a good cause, Dave. Halloween Kills.
Halloween Kills, yes. I know, Nick, you're going to see this.
Yes.
So I'm not going to say too much about it. I'm just going to do a real quick overview. It is the third and final part of the new Halloween trilogy that only took into account the original movie and then the new ones.
David Gordon Green.
Man, I'm not gonna. I don't really remember.
Some guy who's doing the Exorcist stuff coming up.
Okay. I had broadly liked the other two, even though I'm not a big slasher guy.
Yeah.
You know, this promised the final confrontation with Laurie, aka Jamie Lee Curtis from the original movie. And here's what is going to... if you've heard anything about this movie, you've probably heard it's a bit divisive. It kind of... I think it's fair to say it doesn't have a lot of Michael screen time. And there's another sort of plot sort of thing that unfolds. And yes, it does connect up with him eventually. But it's going to be unusual, and some people are going to be like, this isn't what I signed on for. I wanted to see Michael, 2 hours of Michael doing his final blood-soaked... and finale, and it kind of does not deliver on that.
Interesting.
But it does, like, even if you saw the trailer, you know that there is a sort of confrontation between Laurie and Michael. It's shown in the trailer. I won't say anything about exactly where it happens or how much, or, you know, how big or not it is. But there were elements that I was satisfied with, and I respected that there was a certain level of ambition to the movie, but I have to admit, I kind of, even as a non-slasher fan, I wanted sort of more of the classic slasher pleasures. And I kind of thought some of the kills were a little bit weak, and the writing was not quite able to deliver on what the ambition that they had.
Are they trying to bring in Season of the Witch? Is that what they're doing?
Man, you know I would have been all over it if they were about to bring in the greatest Halloween movie.
I just was wondering.
There was at least one visual homage to it. I always appreciate an homage to Season of the Witch. It had, like, you know, like people in the masks or something like that.
Yeah.
Now I can't even quite remember it. But anyway, overall, I'm going to say I was somewhat disappointed in it. And I thought it was mostly because the writing couldn't carry what they were trying to do. And there were times when I was watching this movie, and just imagine, like, a perpetual Spock raised eyebrow, like, really? This is what we're doing?
I can run with a little bit of subverting expectations.
I thought I could.
Okay.
But Nick, we'll have to, once you've seen it, let's compare notes.
Yeah,
I will. We'll return to the podcast and discuss it further.
I'm curious, though.
All right. Nick, you want to talk about Hellraiser with me, the new Hellraiser?
Yes, sure.
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, neither of you guys are exactly wildly enthusiastic, but neither of you hated it?
No, it's fine.
Yes, it is fine. I've only seen the first one and maybe one other of the Hellraiser, so I'm not like the biggest Hellraiser fan in all the land.
Everything I've heard from people who are Hellraiser fans is just watch the first two.
Yeah.
And I have seen the first one in theaters, maybe, or on VHS when it first came out, and that's been, I don't know, 30 years.
Yeah. Hellraiser was legitimately groundbreaking. There's, the lore of the Cenobites, the original stuff. I didn't see this, but... the original one had the lore of the Cenobites, the weird bondage S&M thing, the fact that, like, this creepy, kinky sort of sex was, like, such a big sort of thing in it. The chick who's, like, seduced by the guy who still looks like he's been flayed.
in it, and all these sort of creepy erotica.
That stuff is kind of there.
I've heard it's not as kinky and weird in that level as the original.
I mean, they basically say the Cenobites are there for pleasure, like a different type of pleasure
Their version of the Cenobites I thought was one of the most interesting things, and unfortunately we didn't get a lot of it because they mostly kind of stand around. But they're basically, the Cenobites are just like, they're trying to grant wishes, but they're really bad at being genies. Because they don't understand what pain and pleasure is. So
that's a cool premise, though. Genies who don't even understand our concepts.
One of the guys, the most interesting character, Goran Visnjic, who plays sort of this industrialist who tried to summon the Cenobites.
Well, he's like an occultist, and he sacrifices people.
He basically winds up with this big gear in his chest, and he just wants to be done with all of it. He's like, at this point, I just want to die. And they're like, but you asked for this. Why did you not like this?
You wanted the ultimate.
Why would you reject our gift? And it is very much like whatever you get from them, it's going to be like monkey's paw, but not on purpose. Like, they literally don't understand
what's
good or bad.
Yeah, there's like six things you can choose at the end. Yeah. Like resurrection, eternal life.
It's a demon's version of it. So it's like whatever you get is going to be bad.
That is fun sounding. I like that. What kicks the plot off? Like,
This is the problem. The first two acts I think are very slow, and they are about a girl who's like a junkie. It's like her last chance. She's living with her brother and his boyfriend and their roommate, and she is kind of screwing up again because she is she's fallen off the wagon a little bit. She's having sex with this other guy in her her rehab group.
Yeah,
and they're not a good match for each other.
And they're trying to make a buck, and he drops this.
They basically steal the box.
Yeah, out of a big warehouse that was supposed to have other things, but it only has this box.
Yeah,
and.
But real quick aside, one of the coolest things about it is hard to introduce a new monster to the lore, to film canon or monster canon. Zombies were one of the big breakouts in like the 60s and onward. The Cenobites, I think, and like Chucky and stuff like that, have legit left their mark on it. Mm-hmm. The lore of the box and their dimension and Pinhead and all that stuff, that has managed to become like something that has entered horror fandom.
Yeah, agreed.
Sure.
Anyway, so...
I mean, and it goes from there. There's different configurations to the box, and you're trying to get through six configurations to reach sort of their version of heaven in a lot of ways.
CG are the visuals?
Not too bad. Yeah,
I felt I was worried about seeing Cenobites that look too CG.
No, their Cenobites are great. That's one of the best parts of it, I think.
Okay. I honestly will say that the Cenobites of the original are a little more terrifying than these are. These aren't bad, though. Especially, what they refer to as the chitterer. Yeah. He was cool.
Did he do the little teeth clacky thing?
Yeah, he does the teeth clacky thing, and I was like, oh, that's creepy.
That was in the original, too.
Yeah, he was.
Or something like it.
But my problem with it were I didn't care about these characters very much.
Yeah. That is the big problem. The characters are not... I mean, they're... I don't know why.
As you describe them, they sound interesting and sort of sympathetic and damaged.
Yeah, they're just not.
I get that. Sometimes they just don't carry it.
They're very surface.
On paper, this all sounds interesting, but unfortunately, the third act of it is they wind up in this industrialist, mansion, old murder mansion.
Yeah.
And then there's a big showdown with the Cenobites. That whole third act is really good.
Yeah.
But it took us way too long to get there.
And I never did care for them. So I was actually okay with most of them.
That's the other problem is I didn't care for any of them.
Job.
you can't have a horror movie where you don't care if everybody dies.
Right.
And that's kind of part of the problem. And,
well, you've given me enough stuff that I kind of want to see it, I think.
It is, I think, the lowest on the Bruckner tier of horror films.
Oh, for sure. Like, it's nowhere near The Night House or The Ritual.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's okay. It's fine.
Where's it streaming?
Hulu.
Okay.
That said, if they do another one, I'd probably watch it. Just be curious and see where they go with the Cenobites.
They have such pleasures to show you.
They have such pleasures to show us.
I did like Pinhead. I think they were great.
Their Pinhead's great.
Oh, that's right. This was Pinhead female, non-binary.
I believe, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Right on.
And then I watched a 2005 movie called The Descent.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Neil Marshall movie. Neil Marshall directed Dog Soldiers and a bunch of
that was like
Doomsday.
His low-budget breakout.
Yeah, he directed several episodes of Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
This was his movie. It is about a group of women, mostly British, although there are some Americans. They are cavers.
Yeah.
In the opening few minutes, in a very shocking scene, one of the women loses her husband and her daughter.
Yep.
And she's sort of haunted by that. A year later, they go on this caving trip, and when they go into the caves, spoilers, there's monsters in there.
Yep. They, like, stir up a nest of creepy, slimy monsters and stuff.
It's very claustrophobic. It's very,
It's very visceral kind of horror is what I remember.
Yeah.
I've only seen it once, and I didn't like it. I remember I didn't like it as much as other people did, but I did like it.
Yeah.
For sure.
I enjoyed it. I think I was watching it with the group I was watching it with. We were all like, well, we would never have been in the situation because we were all terrified of the caves.
You're right.
Like,
but these people are cavers.
Yeah. But the claustrophobia is part of it, and then you got monsters on top of it. It is really scary.
Yeah. They managed to like, the suspense in it is of that very sort of, you know, razor wire taut suspense.
Yeah.
Cool looking creatures, as I recall.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, it's on my to revisit list at some point.
It's worth a look. I will honestly say I think it is my least favorite of the Marshall's movies I've seen because Dog Soldiers is great and Doomsday is
bonkers
but fun.
Yeah. Doomsday, I don't know if people have seen this, but we've talked about it at least once or twice in the past. Somehow combines like Road Warrior, medieval knights,
and zombies.
Zombies, like a post-apocalypse plaguey stuff.
Yep.
Like, it has, like, five different genres in there.
It is crazy.
And it's stupid in a very fun way.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, I think that's everything we've got for this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.